forward and get to where you started and then start.
Okay, I'm going to start again. So anyway, today is the 25th of September, and it's also the 21st of Elul, Sunday morning. We're reviewing the quiz on the 7th Perek of Brachot, the 4th and 5th Mishnayot. We said that Einan means there isn't, Rasha'in is allowed, permitted. Very good. Lechalek, we said, is divisible. Nechakin is the same thing. And we get to Mr. Gal, or Chaburot. What is Chaburot?
Chaburot means groups.
Groups, you got it. Miktzatan, it's the language of Miktzat, or Tzat.
Fewer little.
Fewer little, fantastic. You're doing very good. Elu. Elu ve'elu.
Those,
right, these, those. Mitztarfim. All eyes are on Brooke.
That was the bringing together the group.
Very good, bringing together.
That's good.
Combining. Le'atzman.
By themselves.
By themselves. Fantastic. Oh, the pressure is on. Le'tocho. It's about pouring water.
Right, right. Until?
Yeah.
Is it until or amongst?
It's. You're close. We'll give you another chance.
It's like if you're
added to?
To. It means into.
To. Okay.
The tocho. Toch is the within of something.
Right.
Within.
The innards. So the next word is Aramaic. Mr. Gal, you got the Aramaic word bao.
I don't know where it is.
With an ayin, not with an aleph.
I don't know that.
It was in the Tosfot on Sheshem that we saw it. You remember?
It's in the Gemara?
It's in the Gemara, and it's in the Tosfot on Sheshem. I'm looking at the sheets from last week. And there in the sheets from last week, on the first page of the source sheets, it said, Mitztarfim, Perush, I bau Mitztarfim. If they bau, then Mitztarfim. What
they
did bau mean?
They come.
No, that's with an aleph. That's in Hebrew. We're in Aramaic.
If they want.
If they want.
Intent.
Right, if they want.
If they want.
If they want. Bao means, remember I said it means need, want, or ask? Need, want, or ask. A baya in the Talmud is a question.
Yeah.
Not a problem. That's in Hebrew.
Uh-huh.
But a baya with an ayin is a question. The next word was mapa. Because remember we saw in the Tosfot on Sheshem, quoting from the Gemara, that a mapa can be mitzarefet a number of different people. So what is a mapa?
Tablecloth.
Tablecloth. We said even if they're on different tables, but if there's one mapa, it can be mitzaref them. And then we have a word here that the Tosfot on Sheshem use that we've seen many times in the past years, the resha, as opposed to the seifa.
The beginning.
Very good. Yeah, okay. Fantastic. In the language of Rosh, like Rosh Hashanah. Mm-hmm. The beginning. So now we get to the next part of the quiz, which is general concepts that came out of our study. What was the position of Professor Chanuch Albeck concerning the apparent redundancy of the beginning of Mishnah 4 as compared to the beginning of Mishnah 1? Right, they both began saying, Shlosha Shachlu Kechad, Shlosha Shachlu Kechad. And the first Mishnah said, Chayavim L'Zamen. And the fourth Mishnah said, Einan Rishayin Lechalek. Do you remember?
He was saying there are two different sources, two different sources, and were joined in the, in the redaction of the Mishnah.
Right. So Professor Albeck said, you don't have to be worried or perturbed if you see apparent redundancy. It might be a real redundancy, and so what? He said, the Mishnah is made, like Amiran said, is composed of different sources from different texts. And perhaps the editor of the Mishnah didn't make the effort to do full editing, like in the modern sense of removing all the redundancies. He just took his materials as they were and included them.
Well, also, I guess the idea is that these were familiar segments, and so you would do a disservice almost to the people.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. Since we're talking about memory and people perhaps had units of material memorized in their minds, so if there are two different materials and each one adds something above the other, even if they have a lot that's in common, we'll take both of them into our text. That's his theory.
When you were coming out with the book, Torah from Texas, and you were talking about not adding or subtracting from Torah, I mean, there's that.
Okay, that's different.
So everything should be preserved now.
Right, that's Torah Shebichtav, not tampering with Torah Shebichtav, but it's really interesting you make the connection.
Uh-huh. But that kind of flies in the face of the other concept that everything is meant to give you some kind of chidush. I mean, this is a different... The opposite.
It certainly flies in the face of that, and my impression is, if some people have heard me say, that that idea that there's no redundancy, whether it's in Mishnah or in Torah, has gained ascendancy in, I don't know if it's in American Orthodoxy or around the world, and it's a certain Haredi influence that's certainly a distortion in the following sense. Going back to the Midrashic material, it's a machloket between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Akiva says that there's nothing in the Torah that doesn't come to add something, whereas Rabbi Yishmael says, Dibrat Torah Kalashon B'nei Adam, Torah speaks the language of men, and sometimes it repeats itself because that's the way people speak. They repeat themselves for emphasis.
That was Ibn Ezra's approach also, right?
I don't know. So to say that the only position, the only traditional Orthodox Jewish understanding is the Torah has no superfluous words, that's not true. There is such a position, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Yishmael again and again challenges Rabbi Akiva. What do you learn from that? What do you learn from that? And he makes fun of him. He said, can you learn something from that word and from that? And Rabbi Akiva always has an answer. But there's a raging, raging machloket there.
And then also the question is, in Rabbi Akiva's mind, is that his position because he's preserving the unity? In other words, and he's saying you can learn something if you try hard enough, you can get something out of everything if you squeeze it hard enough? Or is Rabbi Akiva saying this is really the shot? In other words,
good question, right? Think back to the Gemara in Masechet Menachot that many people have heard in Chavtet that says HaKadosh Baruch Hu was about to give the Torah, and Moshe Rabbeinu was waiting in the anteroom to get the Torah. He's up on Mount Sinai and he's looking at his watch, and it's taking a long time. And finally, Moshe Rabbeinu says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so what's taking you so long? And God says, wait a second, I'm tying crowns on the letters. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, what are you doing that for? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, there's going to be a man at the end of a number of generations that's going to learn out heaps and heaps of halachot from these crowns. So Moshe Rabbeinu is impressed. He doesn't see anything in those crowns. And he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, can I see this guy? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no problem, turn around. Moshe turns around, he finds himself in the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Akiva. And he didn't understand what's going on.
Right. They said this is halacha l'moshe b'sinai.
But wait a second. He felt faint. Until one of the students challenged Rabbi Akiva and said, how do you know that? What's the source? And said, Rabbi Akiva, halacha l'moshe b'sinai. And Moshe didn't understand what was going on, but he felt much better. That's the end of the story. It's the second part. But to make a long, 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 long story very short, it would seem from the story that the crowns don't have specific intention, their potentiality. They're to provide the basis for Rabbi Akiva to use his creativity in tandem with the Kodesh Baruch Hu's Torah and uncover or create, depending how you look at it, but it looks like it's create further understandings that are in accord with the Torah, but they're not necessarily intended there. And that's what the Masoret says about Rabbi Akiva, the Rabbi Akiva that learned even from the word et. From every word et, he learned something out. Yeah. So, the next question was, what was Professor Albeck's position vis-a-vis the Talmudic passage that tried to quote-unquote eliminate the redundancy? Remember, the Gemara said, how could it be that it says what it says in Mishnah Aleph and it says what it says in Mishnah Daled? The Gemara had three different possibilities of understanding what is it that one Mishnah adds over and above the other, even though they seem not to add anything. And that, Professor Albeck said, anyone remember?
He says it's just being used as a hook.
Exactly, it's just being used as a hook. Like, before we started this, Eric guessed what we mean, even though he wasn't here. Yeah. And Professor Albeck claims that just as it's pretty clear that Tanaim vis-a-vis the Torah in their Midrashim sometimes use the Torah as a hook to pin on it their pre-existing rabbinic halachot called an asmachta. In the same sense, the Amoraim use Tanaitic material as a hook to pin on it their pre-existing material. That is the chidush of Professor Albeck. And he claims, therefore, that the Gemara knew that the Mishnah really is redundant. And there's nothing intrinsically to learn from the second mention of the phrase Shlosha Shechlu Kechad. But it just uses that seeming that real redundancy as a hook to put there, hang there its own Hidushin. Okay. Next. What are the two possible approaches to understanding our Mishnah's relationship to the concept of Shlosha Shachlu Ke'echad? Our Mishnah, I mean Mishnah Hey. Thank you.
Yep.
David is so modest he doesn't want to be on tape. Is it possible to formulate a general rule vis-a-vis the understanding of the present participle in the Mishnah to tractate brachot as reshut or chova? So the present participle in the Mishnah we're talking about is mitzdarfim. And we pointed out we've had present participles very often in this tractate. We had shoalim shalom, shoel shalom. When you're in the middle of Kriyat Shema, we had Mivarech Shayim Lefaneh V'Achareya. And we also have here, Mitztarfim, the question is Rishud HaChova, this was a kind of a trick question. Is it possible to formulate a general rule? The answer is?
No.
It's apparently not possible. It depends on the context. Sometimes it's Chova, usually it's Chova, but sometimes it seems to be Rishud. In our Mishnah, the halacha interprets it as reshut. You don't have to be mitzdarfim, but you're allowed under these circumstances.
In other words, there's nothing in the lashon of the Mishnah that would give you an indication one way or the other.
In the lashon, there's nothing, right? Uh-huh. In context, there might be,
right.
But in the word itself, you can't know. What are the two possible approaches to understanding our Mishnah's relationship to the concept of Shlosha Shachlu Ke'echad, enunciated earlier in the chapter? Okay, this was important, I think. So on the one hand, we have Shlosha Shachlu Ke'echad, and that's under the condition that they achlu ke'echad. They ate together, and then they're mitzdarfim. They're einan yoshein lechalek. They can't divide. They're hayvim lesamen. But our Mishnah talks about a case which they eat in two chavarot, and it says mitzdarfim. So, what are the two different ways of understanding the relationship of our Mishnah to the concept of Shlosha Shachlu Ke'echad? The Tosfot Anshei Shem gave us one understanding, if you remember.
I think it had to do with whether it's a personal obligation or a group obligation. Is that this?
No. But it's a concept we talked about, but not here.
Okay.
The issue was, is our case of ru'im ze'etzeh, is that a definition of a chluk echad? Or is it a new category? And we learned in the first Mishnayot of the chapter that if they achlu ke'echad, then chayvin lezamen. Comes our Mishnah and says you have two chabrut that they see each other. Is that a definition of achlu ke'echad? Is it the seeing that makes them achlu ke'echad? And if that was the case, then our Mishnah, when it says mitzdarfim, would have to be interpreted as, at least in certain circumstances, I take it back. What I said at the beginning is correct, but I said at the end is wrong. The question is this ri'ah that brings us to mitzdarfim, is it a definition of achlu ke'echad or is it not? And I suggest when we first learn this that it's very straightforward and plausible to learn that it's a definition of a chluk echad. And if they're ru'im zetzeh, it's as if they ate as one, and then to go back to the previous Mishnah to see under what circumstances are they mitzarfim or not. Right, mitzarfim. But we learned if there's shisha, then they can be divided. If there's only three, they can't be divided. But it's a redefinition, I should not say a redefinition, it's a definition of what it means ke'echad.
Like a diuk or something?
No, not a diuk. It's just coming to define what the concept is. But we saw that Tosfot Anshei Shem did not agree with that at all. And then we saw in the Halakha, in the Shulchan Aruch did not agree with that. The Rishonim apparently have a very clear understanding that Ru'im Zetzeh is not a definition of Echad, of a Chluk Echad. It's simply another category. If they are Chluk Echad, then Chayvim L'samen. But if they're Ru'im Zetzeh, there's no Chiyuv. It's only Rishut. It's only Rishut, whether there are three people, or six people, or 10 people, or 20 people, or 50 people, doesn't matter. It's only Rishut. It's never more than Rishut. To create any type of Chovah, they have to have eaten literally as one, which means the same table, or at least the same tablecloth connecting different tables. But they didn't eat as one, but they rather are in two or three or four or five groups, and they see each other, that creates enough siruf for a voluntary coming together. So but there's no chovah, because they didn't eat ke'ahad.
That gets around. If the position was that this is a definition of ke'ahad, you would have a redundancy problem again. In theory, I mean, you'd have the...
No, you wouldn't. It would be telling us what does it mean, ke'echad.
Okay.
That even ru'im zetzeh constitutes ke'echad. I wouldn't have known that. That's not a redundancy. So we said last time that this is very relevant to situations like weddings, right? You eat at the table with the people that you're sitting with, and there's lots of people in the room, so you can see zetzeh at different tables, but you didn't eat ke'echad. And therefore, the saying of the zimun with the other tables in the room is completely reshut. And there's no chovah there. The chovah says, say zimun to the people at your table. That's more of a chovah than any type of siruf to a larger group. Siruf to a larger group is a reshut. You can do it. But there's no necessity. Okay, let's go on. Why might the second half of the Mishnah be where it is?
Nowhere else to put it?
Nowhere else to put it could be one possibility. And indeed, we point out that the previous chapter also has something tacked on at the end. But if we want to be more elegant, we could say
that the drinking the wine is related to Birkat HaMazon.
Exactly. Right? It could be going in the order of the Suda. And this the what happens at the end of Birkat HaMazon is we drink the wine. Could be. Okay, next question. If one does not put water in the wine, what three possibilities are there as far as the bracha to be said? What is the source of rationale for each of the possibilities?
You can say nothing.
It could,
because
might be nothing.
It's under the rule that if it's distasteful or not nourishing.
Right, right.
Bore priya eitz.
Could be bore priya eitz because...
Because that is the correct bracha for regular use.
Right.
If it's not used for...
Right, if it doesn't become wine,
right.
Just grapes.
Right.
Right. And what's the third possibility?
Shekel.
Shekel. Why shekel?
Juice, if it's been transformed and not recognized as...
But it's not
it's
diluted,
distilled
right?
Enough. Diluted, distilled.
No, that's not the reason. It's true. We could maybe shekel. There's a machloket there, remember, concerning things that are min khala, things that are a curse. One said you don't say anything.
Oh.
The other said you say shakol. So if we say that this is a curse, that it's really, really disgusting, it's not the way you're supposed to drink it, it's either shakol or it is nothing. But if we say it's really drinkable, it's just not the definition of wine, then it's ha'etz. Right. Very good.
So wait a minute, wouldn't that be four then? Because kiddush would be a four. If it is wine.
No, but I said the question is if we don't put water into it. Which means it's certainly not wine, so it's certainly not a wine bracha.
It's the option for the bracha medicine as well, no bracha or shakol.
Depending on whether it's min klala or not.
Depends how much water you put in the wine. You put more water, then you make a shakol, but more water than usual.
But that would also be true.
If you put just a little bit water, then it's fine.
That's also true, right? If you dilute it so far.
How much water,
so that, that's very interesting what Mr. Gala says. The same drink could go from being shakol to break your gut and back to shakol, depending on how much water you put in it.
It can go back from one brother to the other one.
Okay, so what additional way to affect siruf, in addition to ro'im zetzeh, did the Talmud Bavli bring up? How else can you affect siruf?
Just remind us of siruf.
Was there an example of
coming together?
The waiter?
Waiter, very good. Okay. The shamash. Right. Even if they're shamash. not ruim zetze, but there's a shamash echad that goes around among them, even if he's not eating, as long as he's there and serving the different tables,
shamash,
even though they see each other, then that could be affecting siruf, creating siruf.
What's the havamina that it's coming from the same source? The food is coming from the same source that he is...
So, let me correct you, it's not Havamina, because this is actually the Maskana.
Okay. Well,
I don't know if it's a matter of the same source. It's just something is indeed tying them together.
Okay.
So, did the example say that they were in separate rooms, or were they under one roof?
That's a good question. The Bavli didn't mention that. The Yerushalmi brought it, the matter of being in different rooms. And then in the Halakha, you have the discussion of, does this apply even in separate rooms? Let's look at the last question.
But where did the they could be in different houses come in? Was that
was in the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi said, a shnei batim mitzracha. The Halakha applies even to shnei batim. Wait a second, I'm sorry, you said rooms or houses?
Rooms.
Oh, then I made a mistake. Rooms is fine for tziruf. Right? Since it said bayit echad in the Mishnah, and it didn't say yerum echad, cheder echad, so we can assume that as long as it's bayit echad, then it's okay. Even if it's two rooms, or three rooms,
even
or four rooms.
Room, yeah.
But the Yushami said, even if it's two different houses. The last matter here, what condition... And I made a mistake, it should be limiting tziruf, did the Talmud Yerushalmi bring up? What condition that limits tziruf?
They have intention.
Very good, okay. That they had to come in together at the outset with intention to be mitzdareif. And in the Shulchan Aruch we saw that the Shulchan Aruch mentions that condition. And I don't remember for the last minute or two we managed to see the Mishnah Berurah that there's a machloket achronim if the condition of intention applies, is necessary only when it's shnei batim, or is necessary even when it's bayit echad. And the Mishnah Berurah said that many, many achronim are mekel, that you need this condition of intention only if it's shnei batim. But if it's bayit echad, you don't even need the condition. Which means you can have lots of people in this room who did not intend to say Birkat Mazon together. For example, when you have the back to school, the New Year barbecue, people come in at different times to the room. They don't think they're going to say Birkat Mazon together, but if someone decides to bring everyone together, then there's reshut to do so. Okay?
Would it be a similar situation here on Shabbat with Sudat Shlishi?
So there, I would say, people have the intention, though. They already have the intention. So that's pshita, that's simple. But even if they didn't have the intention, we can still do Birkat Hamazon together. Again, it's all reshut. It's all reshut.
That's a better example.
Does the distinct, the position of the Achronim have to do with paskening from the Yerushalmi, or is it more based on the concepts involved?
I didn't see the material, I just read the Mishnah Berurah. I can't say anything. Okay, the next Mishnah brings us to the new chapter. And I'm going to give out the question sheets, which have questions on the front and the back. Then I'll give out the source sheets. So we just pass this around. Livriut. Around. I guess this one's for you.
Thank you.
So everyone's going to have one piece of paper.
But there's only one piece?
Just one. everyone just gets one of those.
Here, what's on the back is relevant to what's on the front.
And yes, what's on the back is relevant to what's on the front. And everyone also has the source sheets. Yeah. The Mishnah that we're learning, you should have the Mishnah, the beginning of Perek Shmini, because you have the piece of paper from last week with the last Mishnah of the previous Perek there. The Mishnah itself has no words in it that you wouldn't know. No words in it that you wouldn't know. But in the materials that we'll see later, you probably have words that you wouldn't know. So I'm going to help you out with some of those words. The word gorem. Gorem.
Cause.
Cause. I'm going to show you what that is. In the beginning of the source sheet, with the staple in it, like 5 pages stapled together, we have a gemara here in brackets, which again, of course, is on the question sheet telling you when to do it. And one of the words mentioned there, most of the words you would really know, but in the second line of the bracketed material, 3 words from the end, it says gorem.
And what did you say?
Cause. Causes. Another word you might not know is in the fourth line of the bracketed material, exactly in the middle of the line, it says Shetei Amer. Shetei Amer, which is the... I'm trying to say it in English.
Oh.
It's in the passive. The passive of to say.
Shall be said.
Right. That will be said.
Future Nifal.
Shetei Amer, very good. The Nifal future. Shetei Amer, that it will be said. That it will be said. The last word of that line, is Tidira. A very, very important halakhic word, which we've had perhaps a year or two ago. Tadir, in the...
Regular. That's regular.
Very good.
Regular.
Regular, often.
What?
May I borrow this?
Yeah.
Means regular or often.
That's regular. Tadir.
And now on the next page, which is from a Sechet Sukkah, there's no Gemara there, we're just doing it for the Rashi. And I see that the Rashi got cut off. The Rashi is over here.
Uh-huh.
The Rashi got cut off in the left-hand column, and I gave out to someone my sheet which I wrote in. So I'll now help you with it, okay? So you see the Rashi begins in the bracket with Mivarech Alayom. Everyone see that?
Yes.
Paul?
Yeah.
Mivarech Alayom. And it says, Shemikadesh Barvei Shabbatot Kiddush Hayom. The next word has the last mem fell out. It should be Kiddush Hayom. It says, Hey, Yud, Vav, and Adam Mem. Kiddush Hayom. Tchila. V'harkach Birkat Hayayin Shehayom. The last word in line is Yom. The mem fell out. The mem fell out.
Again.
Shayom gorem leyain shiavo, sheim lo mipenei. The nun yud fell out at the end. Mipenei kiddush. Lo hea nizkak lekos lifnei. The nun yud fell out again. Is that a coincidence?
The day's holiday is more important than the blessing of the Yayin.
Okay, that's the story. We don't have too much time. So whatever, I guess we'll take until 10:40. Okay?